You are listening to the Huddle Up Podcast, part of the USA Today Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corey Bonini, and we're here to talk fantasy football for the 2018 NFL season. If you're looking for lineup help, start them, sit them. If you're even curious, who should you be trading for or trading away on your team? Sign up today for thehuddle.com. If you use the code podcast18, you'll get $10 off the subscription. It'll carry you through the fantasy football season. You'll have direct access to all of our staff who's capable of helping you with any information. And we have 20 plus years of proven track record to create winners in the fantasy football world. So that's podcast18. Once again, podcast18. Sign up and get $10 off. TheHuddle.com. Joining me today is Ryan Bonini. We're here to talk some fantasy football for week three and get you on the winning track. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Corey. 2 weeks down, lots still to go. Championships in the forward view.
How did week two treat you?
My favorite league, I'm 0-2. I'm rather salty about it, but I went 3-2 on the week, and it's one of those years. They're not who we thought they were.
I've had a few bad beats so far. I lost 178.5 to 178.2. That makes me a little unhappy, but that's part of the head-to-head territory in fantasy sports, of course. So let's jump right into some big picture items here. I want to talk, before we get into some of the news and notes stuff, I want to talk about a big picture item that's really been weighing on my mind. So we've seen a lot of talk going on, whether it was actually a roughing the passer call and Clay Matthews in the Green Bay game versus Minnesota that made a huge difference in the outcome of it, even though it ended up being a tie. It looked like Green Bay was well on their way at that point. So that in combination with, you know, we've seen so much more emphasis on changing of the receiving rule. There was so much concern whether this was a catch, whether it was not a catch for the last couple seasons. They changed it, and they changed it to benefit the receivers and not benefit the defense. So naturally, those changes are going to, you know, help the offense. So I guess, like I was saying, from a high-level perspective, we have passing numbers through 2 weeks at an all-time high across the board. Okay, last year, receiving numbers, quarterback numbers were down, running back stats were up. Do you think that was a blip?
Oh, man. You also, you know, you nailed a couple pieces there. When you sit back and look at it, there's different role changes every year. So you've got some ebb and you've got some flow to it. So, and like in most sports, scoring is considered the sexy thing that's good for business. Defenders are struggling right now. They're being forced to play touch football, basically. And you mentioned the Matthews roughing the passer, and I'm doing air quotes over here, hit on Kirk Cousins. You know, that was a textbook tackle, plain and simple. And flagging it as roughing the passer is atrocious. Look, defenders don't want to be having to write a check to the NFL every week for some fine, for some new tackling laws they've put in place. These guys have been tackling a certain way since peewee football. As a result, they're going to hesitate. And in the NFL, a split hesitation by a defender is the difference between blowing up a play and allowing a big player a touchdown. And the NFL, like most businesses and most other professional sports leagues, often use a hammer to fix a problem when they should be using a scalpel. So I think you're going to see a lot more of this year. Obviously, they're not going to make changes on the fly. It's going to be great for passing games. It's going to be great for the quarterback, the wide receiver, running backs. You see running backs catching a dozen plus passes right now. And all of this is going to be kind of the way it's going to be this year. And then they'll probably go back and revisit it with yet another hammer hit instead of a scalpel slice next year. And we'll be right back where we started from.
Well, it seems like all it takes is one big play, one controversial hit on a marquee player, almost always a quarterback. I mean, if you go back to Tom Brady, the hit below the knee that tore his ACL, then they implement the rule. You can't hit quarterbacks that low. Then, you know, last year, the Aaron Rodgers collarbone injury against Minnesota. Now you can't ride the quarterback to the ground. So, you know, it makes you wonder what's going to be the next one, right? So as soon as we get a big name passer who suffers some kind of strange injury, you know, as a result of a defender's contact with him, it'll be interesting to see how the NFL reacts to it. But so I guess I know you can't really quantify this in any specific way, but is this good or bad for fantasy football over the long run?
If you like scoring, it's good. If you're an NFL purist and would love to have like a 0-0 game going into the late fourth, It's not football you're going to enjoy watching, but you're probably not playing fantasy football in that type of desired type league scoring anyway. You're going to see 200, 300 point games. Well, it depends on your scoring system, of course, but the points are going to be up. The guys that typically got the points before are just going to get more of them.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder a little bit, and probably a little outlandish on my part, but you know, the NFL knows that scoring is sexy and scoring puts butts in the seats and gets merchandise on backs and so forth. And it really makes you wonder how much of this, you know, with the explosion of fantasy football over the last decade or more, how much of all of these changes in favor of the offense that are usually done under the guise of protection are actually partly a business decision. I mean, I have to think that some of that does come into play.
It would probably very quietly be the 1B to the 1A. So, again, we both said it. People, especially watching sports, like the big play. They like scoring. It gets people cheering. It gets people excited. It gets crowds in the games. We've all been to the game where the most exciting thing going on around the game is the wave.
But, Ryan, defense wins championships.
So do stud running backs, Corey. So do stud running backs.
Yeah, so does Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing for 400 yards a game every week.
Don't even go there.
All right, so let's jump into some of the high-level news items here that people want to talk about. So Josh Gordon, finally that saga is over. He's now a New England Patriot. You know, looking in the short term here, we obviously have the hamstring injury to be concerned about. Not really sure where that's going to, you know, net out over the next week or two. It's obviously going to take him time to get acclimated to the system, get some chemistry with Tom Brady. Then you have to figure that in, you know, after week four, Julian Edelman returns to this offense. Where do you see this going from Josh Gordon's perspective? I mean, do you think this is absolutely an upgrade for his fantasy value from where he was in Cleveland, coming in an offense that he was arguably the one or 1A with Jarvis Landry and you know, had a summer of, obviously missed a little bit of time where he took that hiatus, but he did have enough, you know, reps with the quarterback to at least know what he was dealing with.
The term upgrade feels like a poor use in this situation, and I've struggled for words with it. Quarterback, obviously, night and day difference. Look at any quarterback that Gordon's played with. Night and day difference going to Tom Brady. And generally, in the NFL, I believe talent wins out. In New England, however, it's different. You know, more brains than talent usually works out better in the long run. Guys that put everything they have into their craft, into the team, that's never been Gordon. And I tip my hat to him. He's had his fair share of well-documented off-the-field problems. I hope a change of scenery, a change of team culture can do good for him. But we've also seen way more polished veteran wide receivers go into New England and disappear into obscurity very quickly without making an impact, or the team, because they can't pick up the playbook. They can't pick up the route tree. They can't get on the same page with where Brady needs them to be. You know, you're talking about a 40-plus-year-old quarterback here. He's got very, very little wiggle room for players around him that aren't going to be where they need to be and when they need to be there, regardless of how talented they may be. And we're also talking about a guy that's coming in before week three, not a guy that came in at the beginning of training camp and has had time to go through all of the plays, all of the practices, all of the nuances that go into the New England system. And then you throw in Bill Belichick, who, you know, you close your eyes for more than a second in a blink during a team practice or a team meeting, and you're going to be shown the door very, very quickly. So lukewarm expectations, and I hope Gordon can take it, seize it, and help this be part of a new chapter in his life. Obviously, if you drafted him, you took him somewhere around the 5th to 8th round in most leagues per ADP that I was watching. So you've got some capital invested into him. I think you sit him for a week or two, assuming he does play. It's horrible to sit him against Detroit unless you have no other options. But you really want to see how this plays out. And I can't see him going out there and seeing 40, 50, 60 snaps out of the gate, maybe 15 to 20. Let's get his feet wet, see where he's at. Let's see how good the hamstring is. This is a long-term game for New England. It always is. So they're not going to rush to anything here. So I wouldn't play him this week, maybe even not next week. And then I would be eyeing probably that week 5 game against Indianapolis. Where are you?
I mean, I agree with most of that. I would like to think that, you know, even if he does play this week, there's just no way you can play him in fantasy. So unfortunately, see, this is the good thing. So his bye week in Cleveland is the same bye week in New England. So you don't lose a game there. So that's positive. But he essentially does have this lost game against Detroit. Even if he's active, you know that the Patriots are going to call him, you know, limited and questionable. That's just how they work. And then you also got a late game. So I don't want to take that chance. I don't see much in the way of, you know, progress between here and then the Miami game in week four. Indy can go either way, but I think week six against Kansas City, that's probably the only game I can really see him having a dramatic impact in fantasy. And beyond there is probably a matchup game. And I'm afraid to see what he does to Chris Hogan's numbers, because they're very similar. I mean, obviously Hogan's not nearly as athletically gifted, but they're very similar in terms of what they can do on the field and what their roles would be in a passing game. You know what the role of Julian Edelman will be. You know what the role of Gronkowski will be. Hogan's good in the red zone. He's good stretching the field. And other than that, he's, you know, a guy who can work the sidelines and, you know, run a few drag routes and things like that, but you're not going to be overwhelmed by him. That's the major difference you get with, you know, Josh Gordon, is he can stretch the field, he can play in the red zone, he can play in between the 20s, he can take any route and break it. And, you know, that'll be the intriguing thing of how creative does Josh McDaniels get with getting the ball in his hands and making him, you know, gain yardage in situations that the rest of the receivers just aren't capable of. So moving on, because, you know, we could probably talk Josh Gordon for, you know, most of the show, really. Carson Wentz, you know, coming back from injury. We have the Indianapolis Colts ahead. Probably going to be rusty in my estimation. I have a hard time seeing any way that you can get away with playing him. He's going to be down Alshon Jeffrey, down Mike Wallace. They brought back Jordan Matthews. How quick is he going to be back into the fold? Aside from that, you're talking about Nelson Aguilar. He's caught a lot of passes. He hasn't done a tremendous amount with them. You know, you got Zach Ertz at tight end. Obviously, that's, you know, about as good as it gets. But beyond that, what does he have to work with? He might be down his top two running backs. Corey Clement might be the starting back this week. Not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I don't have anything against him. I think it's actually probably an interesting fantasy play. But Wentz himself, I mean, I just see no way that, one, you could put him in a fantasy lineup. For as average as Nick Foles is as a fantasy quarterback, I don't see Carson Wentz being an upgrade this week from what we've seen so far from Wentz.
That's an interesting approach. I think he's definitely an upgrade. How much?
He's an upgrade in real life. I should make that distinction. Well, in real life, he's definitely an upgrade. But in fantasy, no. I just don't see him being an upgrade for himself or for the receiving core.
Well, he's definitely limited coming out of the gate, both physically and with the personnel around him. You mentioned Clement. I think Clement's honestly the most talented running back on that roster, but we'll see how that plays out in time. So you have to look at Philadelphia here. They're going to rely a lot on their defense. I think Clement tries to take on a bigger role in the running game. I think they're going to do a lot of smart, safe, quick-hitting plays. You had mentioned Matthews. Matthews probably injured his hamstring signing his contract, so I don't think he's a factor. But I think, again, this is part of the long game. So in week three against Indy, do you play him? Probably not, unless you're desperate and in a two quarterback league. You drafted him relatively high amongst quarterbacks in general, so he was probably anywhere from the 8th to the 11th round pick in your league. So you've got something invested in him. I would sit him in a standard league. In a two quarterback league, I think I would slide him out there. Indy's defense really isn't anything to be excited about. And I think your ceiling's probably 250 and two touchdowns with a pick. I don't think he's going to be running much, if any, early on.
I think that's very fair across the board. So another quarterback coming off of a knee injury, thankfully not as severe, Aaron Rodgers. He says he's afraid that this injury could get worse over the course of the season. He claims, you know, he was obviously sore after last week's game against Minnesota, but, you know, he didn't suffer any kind of setback or extra damage to the sprained ligament. Are you overly concerned? Does that change anything for you, I guess? Are you more concerned than you were a week ago at this point?
Well, a week ago, I was quite concerned. I was telling you, I thought anybody that wasn't was being foolish. He had a hell of a knee brace on his leg. He wasn't moving nearly as good. Again, this is a guy that makes plays by moving around in the pocket. He can scramble too. All of this plays a factor in that. It's in his head. He's got his money. It's in the bank, actually. For him, he has very little reason to play outside of just, hey, I'm Warrior Aaron Rodgers. I have a mystique to me. I need to be out there with my team. And he is clearly the best option, even at 50% of the quarterback for them. So if you're the team, you just gave him all this guaranteed money. I think they should be even more cautious than he should be at this point. So there's a lot of concern to be had here. It's going to take some time. He may not be right the entire season. And there's, you know, is there a higher risk of him getting injured worse? You know, you can have a perfectly healthy Aaron Rodgers out there who gets somebody to roll over his ankle and break his leg or fall on his shoulder weird and he's done for the year. So any player, regardless of where they are on the injury spectrum going into a game, is really one weird hit away from missing the rest of the season.
Yeah, you know, and that brings me, sticking with Green Bay, that brings me to an interesting topic, I think, is so I'm pretty convinced at this point that they're going to run the ball more than they have in recent years. Okay. They have, you like to think that every year going into the season, we're like, you know, is this the year that Green Bay is actually going to, you know, reintroduce the running game? Cause I mean, it seems like 100 years ago at this point, but it wasn't that long ago that, you know, Eddie Lacy was an RB1, RB2 guy, right? I mean, so it's not that crazy of a concept to me. So Aaron Jones comes back from a 2-game suspension, probably the most dynamic guy in that backfield. I'm personally not at all even lukewarm on Ty Montgomery. I mean, I think at this point he's a special teams guy. I really don't even think he should be in the backfield. And Jamal Williams, I like what he can do, but he's a guy who needs 20, 25 touches week in and week out to get rolling. And they're not going to do that. They're not going to give him that kind of commitment, right? So if they can do a 1-2 punch between Jones and Williams, take some pressure off of Rodgers. I think that's a win-win for the backfield. I think that's a win-win for Rodgers. Depresses the passing game a little bit. You know, hurts our shares of hurts our shares of Davante Adams and Randall Cobb, and I guess even Geronimo Allison to this point, and Jimmy Graham. But it might bring a little more life to that running game. It might bring some, you know, help to fantasy backfield with Aaron Jones now. Am I living in the past? Probably. Usually, right?
Yeah, usually. I think you're reaching a bit based off of what you'd like to see happen and what common sense should dictate to happen. But the offensive line is still average or less. If the team commits more to the ground game, you know, you mentioned Williams, he's a volume guy. Do they totally get rid of him? I think Jones is physically the most talented and dynamic back in the backfield. I think Montgomery at this point, if you have Montgomery at this point in fantasy, dump him. There's no sense in hanging on to him anymore. I would look at Jones as a running back 3 with a tremendous amount of upside, but that's volatile upside. Williams, an RB4 depth guy, you almost need them handcuffed to each other at this point. I've avoided the situation entirely this year because I didn't think Green Bay would get back to running the ball like they need to. And let's not forget, the defense is still horrible too. So there's many times the running game's taken out of it just by flow of game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it often comes back to this. You know, we see this time and time again in fantasy football. Is a team's going to try to win the football game with their best weapons. And Aaron Rodgers is by far, even like you said, 50% of Rodgers is their best weapon, period, end of story, right? So they're not built to be a running team. They're built to be a passing team. Obviously, if they're trying to win a football game, which is the whole point of playing a football game, right? Unless you're one of these people who enjoys ties. I think ties are insane. I had a fun time with that on Twitter this week, but apparently there are people out there who would love ties. Crazy. Anyway.
End the tie.
Yeah, I agree. But anyway, going off on tangent there. So I really think that it has to run through Aaron Rodgers, and the Packers, from a football standpoint, would be foolish not to unless he is physically that unable to contribute in a meaningful way. So,
and if that's the case, he shouldn't be on the field.
Speaking about, I'm getting pretty good at my segues of going from one broken player to the next to a new situation here. So LeSean McCoy, broken ribs, looks likely to play this week against Minnesota. I don't see any possible reason to put him in a lineup, even if he's 100% healthy. I don't think you can justifiably do it. Maybe in a PPR league if you're trying to get a few points from the reception game, because generally when a team's as strong on the outside as Minnesota is, they funnel defense or offensive players inward, so you see, you know, checkdowns to running backs, you see tight ends catching these short passes over the middle of the field, things like that, that the defense is, you know, willing to allow. And so maybe that's how McCoy, you know, butters his bread this week. I just don't want anything to do with it. I don't want anything to do with the entire Buffalo offense. Is there any, you know, thing I'm missing with that situation?
Nope.
Pretty simple, right? I mean, I don't think there's anywhere else to go with that.
Does Buffalo have an offense right now? You're talking about a guy that's going to be running against a brick wall. Minnesota might break the rest of his ribs and end the season. There's no reason he should be on the field. You know, it's the old adage, there's not enough lipstick in the world to pretty up this pig. Just stay away from Buffalo.
All right. So is there anything here for fantasy purposes with Bryce Butler returning to Dallas because they have such a pathetic receiving core, or Jordan Matthews rejoining the Eagles?
Nope. I like Butler. I liked him a lot 2 years ago, but he's mostly a one-trick pony on an offense that's too one-dimensional right now. Dak is too cautious. He's not going to take many shots to Butler down the field. Maybe in a DFS matchup opportunity because he's going to be cheap, but there's nothing you can rely on here in Dallas.
Yeah, I really have no argument to that. And your comments about Dak Prescott being too cautious, that's right on the money. That is the biggest problem with that offense, is he's unwilling, afraid, what have you, to throw the ball down the field and take chances. That's not in his DNA, apparently. So,
in his defense, he doesn't have a lot of people to put the ball down the air or down the field to hit, too. That offense is really lacking playmakers.
Look, you know, and part of that's on Scott Linehan for play calling. You got to take a couple of shots a game down the field just to even try and draw a pass interference call in today's NFL, right? I mean, you got to give your guy that opportunity. Give him a 50-50 ball down the sideline. Worst case scenario, he gets the offensive pass interference, you know, but maybe you gain some yardage from the defensive call, or he actually comes up with the footballs.
Or it gets intercepted and the ball goes with the other team and they return it for a touchdown.
But yeah, that's well, just... you know, that's why you practice tackling on both sides of the ball. Speaking of tackling like crazy, again, Russell Wilson just got hammered last week. I mean, and not in the fun kind of way. I mean, he got absolutely blasted by the Chicago Bears. And I don't see that changing. I don't see that getting better. In fact, you know, I know you were pretty high on Russell Wilson, and rightfully so. He obviously led the league in touchdown passes last year. I saw it another way, though. I really did. I saw a lot of regression in store. I was worried with the loss of Jimmy Graham. Baldwin, at the time, before he, you know, had this separate knee injury, was already dealing with a knee injury that he came out and said would probably never be 100% all season long. Their offensive line has been a mess for years. Their running game was essentially, you know, starting from scratch as a work in progress. And their number one pick, being a running back, missed most of the offseason with a broken hand, or finger rather. So everything from the get-go sounded wrong about the situation, and so far it's looking wrong. I mean, in most conventional systems, he's the 13th quarterback in fantasy points right now. I don't really see him going farther north than that. I really don't.
Here's where I screwed up in thinking Wilson could keep it going. Despite him being a very heady quarterback, able to do things with his legs, with his arm. Brian Schottenheimer. How in the world anybody continues to give this guy the keys to the kingdom is beyond me. Seriously, why? The offensive line still stinks, as you mentioned. This serious swap at running back and running when you know they're going to, or when the defense knows you're going to run, they can't ever get into any flow. Baldwin's injury hurts. Wilson, I think, is still borderline startable, definitely in two quarterback leagues. There was all the buzz about Carson in the preseason. And the more I looked at him from last year, the less I wanted anything to do with him. He's just a guy.
Yeah, but I gotta Penny. Say, you know, I gotta jump in here. Carson has been so much more dynamic than Rashad Penny so far. So much more.
And then but Penny's still working his way in. He could be a three down back once he figures out how to block.
I'm not terribly down on his blocking. I mean, I'm not. I mean, there's gonna be hiccups, obviously, with a rookie and pass protection. But, you know, Carson looked pretty dang good in his limited work last year. He's flashed a little bit this year. They just won't commit to him and give him the ball enough. But I think the biggest problem is these two backs are way too similar. That's, to me, the bigger issue. It's, you know, usually teams, when they do the split backfield approach, they have a plodding between the 20s guy like an Adrian Peterson, and they give you that dynamic change of pace, pass-catching guy like Chris Thompson. You know, CJ Prosykes, I guess, should be the Chris Thompson, but he's, you know, obviously always injured and just isn't that good of a player. Myself included, I won't pretend I didn't tout him at one point in time. He certainly misread that situation. The talent just isn't that good. So are we talking a 50-50 split the rest of the way, barring injuries, between Carson and Penny?
Probably. You know, Schottenheimer's going to do I'm going to hit you with one average hit and another average hit, and I'm going to be predictable about it the entire way. So yes, probably both are RB3 level guys. At some point mid-season-ish, I think one is going to leapfrog the other. It probably will be injury related.
Well, we've seen historically, I mean, look at Russell Wilson's ascension. We see historically Pete Carroll is not afraid to give, you know, the less heralded player, the lower draft pick, etc. He's not afraid to put him in ahead over a, you know, a highly priced free agent addition or a high draft pick. That's never been an issue for Carroll. And I personally think that they can't ignore if we keep seeing these 5.1 yard per carry type games, even in limited work from Carson. How do you ignore that and go to Penny when he's ripping off 2.5, 3 yards every other carry and he just isn't explosive? I mean, he hurt his finger. He didn't hurt his legs. He's just not showing the explosion. The vision has been a problem. I don't see it getting any better. And I'm to the point now where maybe Tyler Lockett is the only player in this offense I want anything to do with. And I hate to say that to all you Will Disley proponents out there, but Tyler Lockett's the only guy who looks like he can gain separation in the passing game. He's the only guy who looks like he's in sync with Russell Wilson. And he's the only guy that I personally would trust in a fantasy lineup in any scoring system at this time.
I think Disley is worth a look. Don't be dissing Disley. See what I did there? Oh, no, but seriously, yeah, it's hopefully Baldwin's back and ready to go in a couple of weeks, and that makes a difference. But the offensive line, you know, that's still going to be one of the biggest problems for Seattle moving forward.
Sure. You know, and you also talked about, you know, being predictable, but it is in their defense, it is hard when you're like second and 15 every play. You know, it's hard to get any kind of consistency or flow going on, but somebody
the defense can't bail them out anymore too. So you got a lot of problems in Seattle.
Absolutely. But somebody who has had no problem with flow finding the end zone, Patrick Mahomes, everybody's talking about him. We won't waste too much time on him here. He's universally owned. There's really nothing you're going to do. You're not going to pick him up. Most likely not going to trade for him. You probably have to give up a king's ransom to get him. And quarterback trading is usually tricky to begin with, in my opinion. We're talking about a historic pace here. We're talking about people who are saying Peyton Manning's 55 touchdown mark might be in jeopardy. How extreme of a point of view is that? Are we looking at a guy who legitimately is in the 3 to 4 touchdown pass conversation on a weekly basis? Because that's what it would take.
I think Mahomes just threw 2 more touchdowns while you were leading into that. Look, teams have 3 games of tape. 2 weeks this year, 1 week last year of Mahomes to work with. He's also lit up 2 pretty crappy defenses. Is he starter worthy? Absolutely. Get him in your lineup. But it's not going to be a magic carpet ride all season either. The passing touchdown record is not in jeopardy this year. It's just not. The future is bright. He's got a ton of weapons around him. He's going to probably be a top 5, top 6 fantasy quarterback, but defenses will start to catch up to him sooner than later because defensive coordinators are going to have more and more material to work with.
I think he's easily number 2 right now. In fact, maybe even number 1. I mean, Rodgers being the only other guy I would consider over him at this point. And I guess that's a testament to Aaron Rodgers on one leg, right? But so Mahomes, I mean, he has the weapons, as you mentioned. The offensive line is playing fairly well. They have a running game if they need to rely on it. Andy Reid loves throwing the ball. No defense to speak of. I mean, to me, it's very realistic. He challenges 50 touchdown passes. Does he get to 55? I don't know. I mean, at this point, you know, who cares? Who cares? Like, if he throws 45, you're like, oh, well, what the hell? Who cares? You know,
if he throws 35, you're very happy for a guy you took in the 14th or 15th round. You're giddy. So, you know, he's going to have a great season. There's no question about that. But these talks about breaking all the records, we're 2 games in. Let's get real.
Well, you know, I also think that you might have to get ahead of the curve a little bit on something like this. I mean, every once in a while, you get one of these historic seasons that starts off super hot and everybody goes, oh, you know, pump the brakes, it's gonna die. And it doesn't. And it just simply doesn't. That's kind of where I met with Ryan Fitzpatrick really quick. You know, everybody says all of these, look at everywhere Ryan, I think you talked about this last week, Ryan Fitzpatrick, everywhere he goes, he turns into a pumpkin, right? And that's true. He has. Absolutely he has. There's no doubting that. But all it takes is that what if one time scenario where he is Randall Cunningham with the Vikings or he is Rich Gannon with the Raiders. We're talking about guys who have this once in a career or once, almost even once in a generation level season that nobody sees coming. And it always makes you wonder, how does it take a guy to be 33, 4, 5, et cetera, before he has this monster breakout year? And I've basically convinced myself, for right or wrong, that this is Ryan Fitzpatrick's Rich Gannon caliber year. It's going to happen.
I want to lift that beard up and see if Brett Favre is under there. maybe, you know, it's entering waiver picks this week. He was still there in every league.
I know. I bid on him in every league. I got him twice. I was really happy.
Good for you. Spend that free agent budget. I hope it's leagues we're in together. Maybe I'm so torn on this just because we've seen the life cycle of Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's, you know, Winston's been out. He's had nobody looking over his shoulder. D-Jax has been on the field. He's playing like D-Jax from 7-8 years ago. Evans is back to elite form. They've got two talented tight ends. They have literally no running game. The defense is average at best, so he's having to sling the ball constantly. But a lot of these are chunk plays, and chunk plays don't stand the course of time. You know, you're not going to keep going over the top of defenses to Jackson for 50, 60, 70-yard touchdowns.
Tell that to the greatest show on turf.
I say that.
Tell that to Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce that chunk plays don't last.
I say that after spending 5 minutes earlier talking about how scoring is sexy and big plays and defenders don't know how to play defense anymore. So you cue the Twilight Zone music if you can punch that in here.
I think the NFL's actually, like those rule changes we talked about earlier, I think they actually drastically lend to these big chunk plays happening more often than they used to. And this is a perfect offense for it. There's so many people to cover. There's so many weapons.
It happened more often, but again, sustainability. And again, Fitzpatrick mentioned magic carpet ride of Mahomes. I tip my hat to him. This guy is doing it. I hope he keeps it up and proves me wrong, just because it would be magical to see. But the Tampa Bay roster isn't that special.
I have to disagree. There's just so many places to go with the football. It's very difficult to cover everybody. So somebody who has not been hard to stop at all so far, two games in, very small sample size. I have to say, okay, let me preface this. I hate to say this. I really do. I really hate to say I told you so. Maybe not you per se, but fantasy, you know, enthusiasts in general. Dalvin Cook is going to struggle and continue to struggle. I said that before. He was, you know, week four will mark a year since he tore his ACL. Okay, we got a guy who's averaging 3 yards a carry right now. Latavius Murray is seeing a substantial workload early in the season to help take some of that pressure off of Cook. Cook's been involved in the passing game like he was last year. That's about the only thing that's even made him fantasy relevant at all through two games. I don't see that improving drastically, especially if it doesn't happen against Buffalo this week. I don't know where you were on him, you know, entering the year. If you were high, has this changed your opinion? And if not, are you worried that this might carry on a lot longer than the next couple of weeks?
I got a lot of Cook this year, unfortunately, because I found myself drafting in like the 10, 11, 12 hole regularly, and he was sitting there looking at me. So I do have him in a number of leagues. I don't know that I would turn Murray's load so far as substantial. We're talking 7.5 carries per game in two versus 13 carries for Cook plus receptions. You're talking, as you just mentioned, not even a year removed from the ACL. I think, again, this is a long-term game. We didn't see a lot of him in the preseason. We didn't see a lot of him in training camp because they were taking it easy on him. Give him time. He'll get stronger. The Vikings know that they need him more later in the year than they do right now. He's still no worse than a flex play option, especially in a PPR league. As time goes, I think he sees more and more work. I think that 3.0 yards per carry starts to reach more like 4.5. And defenses are going to have to really start respecting Kirk Cousins more than they have so far, because Captain Kirk is showing he can continue it in Minnesota just as he did in Washington.
Oh, he might be better. He really might be better. And, you know, there were a lot of people who were questioning whether or not he was capable of getting it done. And if you watch that Green Bay game, I think that's all you need to know about what Cousins is capable of. Big, big numbers, as we talked about so far through 2 weeks, especially on the receiving side of things. Michael Thomas, 28 receptions through two games. That's laughable to me. I mean, that puts him on pace for, what, 200-something catches, if my math is right? Okay, obviously that's, you know, unsustainable. Mark Ingram comes back in two games. I've had owners of Michael Thomas asking me, should I trade him straight up for a guy who, you know, I hate to say he's struggling, but, you know, Antonio Brown's numbers are down a little bit. Odell Beckham's numbers are down a little bit. Tyreek Hill's numbers are up, but he also doesn't have to worry about the offense radically changing if a guy comes back anytime soon, like you do with Thomas and, you know, the situation there with Mark Ingram. So people are trying to capitalize on the value before, you know, Thomas comes crashing back down. Would you stay the course? Would you trade him? What would you do if you were in that situation?
Yeah, I've got a lot of Thomas and crashing back down. I think I caught 104 balls a year ago. Crashing back to reality is still pretty damn nice numbers. He's got over half of the touchdowns in two games that he had all of last year. I believe it was five total on the year. He might score some more. Ingram comes back. It's ho-hum, so they're going to run more in the red zone and capitalize a little bit better there. His catches go from 14 a game to 10 a game. He's still going to be the volume receiver in that offense. Breeze still looks as good as he's looked at any point in the last.
I got to interrupt. Come on. Think about that for one second. Think about what you just said. 10 catches per game, maybe 10 targets a game. 10 catches a game would be the NFL record. Okay.
All right. Well, okay. 10 targets.
That's what I'm saying. Right now, he's at 14.
If he's catching eight of those 10, he's still going for close to 100 yards a game. He's still quite successful. And you're talking just a handful of catches and a handful of targets more that he's seeing right now. And the defense has been the ants of old. So if that stays in course, Ingram's carries are going to be limited. He's going to pick up some receptions. He's going to be involved more, but it's basically Michael Thomas and nobody else amongst the receivers there. Ginn's going to get his play here and there, but Meredith has been a total non-factor so far.
Yeah, the rookie
Smith looked good in preseason, but he really hasn't made the big leap yet to the NFL. Despite all the splash plays, we have yet to see them on a weekly basis. Everybody knows he's going to Thomas, and it still works.
Yeah, okay.
Right. You ride the train, man. You ride the train.
Meredith still isn't 100%. He missed so much time. He's not up to speed. I understand why they've been keeping him out. I think fantasy owners would probably be foolish if they're cutting him right now, unless they absolutely have no choice, or there's somebody so unbelievable on the waiver wire that they have to drop him for.
Hey,
and then Tre'Quan Smith
was a one-year pony too. You know, in a Chicago team the wide receiver let him walk for an average deal.
You're talking about a guy who passes the eye test, right there. If you ask me. I mean, absolutely see it.
Put your glasses on.
Absolutely see it. Well, okay, and then so you touch on Tre'Quan Smith. So it took, what, I want to say 3 or 4 games before Alvin Kamara was even talked about last year? And then he just absolutely exploded. So, you know, I'm not saying Tre'Quan Smith's going to do that. I'm saying it's not insane to think that in an offense that we've seen time after time, Sean Payton has made rookies, especially receiver rookies, Marques Colston, obviously Michael Thomas. We've seen so many rookies, Cooks wasn't even a bad rookie, come out of nowhere or at least, exceed expectations in an offense that's complicated. Something about what Sean Payton does is so good at relaying the principles of the offense to a young player that they can pick it up easier. I mean, you don't see that. Look around the NFL. You don't see that with any other team. There's no other coach in the NFL that I can think of who has had that kind of success year after year with taking young players and making them absolutely dynamic, game-changing factors in an offense.
Somebody's got a lot of Smith and Meredith on their roster.
Yeah, right. That's the weirdest thing. I have no Tre'Quan Smith. I have none at all. But
I'm not saying Smith is going to be useless. I'm just saying right now, it's Michael Thomas.
And it probably will be. Okay, so then how come everybody was so wrong?
This is his fourth year.
How come everybody was so wrong? So, okay, anybody who drafted Antonio Brown or OBJ had a shot at drafting Michael Thomas, and they passed on Michael Thomas because of what? The perception of OBJ and the perception of Antonio Brown? No, it's because what they've done historically has been amazing fantasy production. And
pretty sure I took Thomas over OBJ and maybe even Julio in a couple MFL 10s. I'd have to go back and look.
Well, kudos to you if that's the case. The majority of drafters did not do that, right? And then Tyreek Hill, if the mentality is that Patrick Mahomes is going to at least threaten the touchdown record, that means Tyreek Hill is going to have minimum 10, 12, 14 touchdown receptions?
Very well could.
Very well could. Can we say that about Michael Thomas? I don't know, maybe. I'd be kind of surprised if he had more than 10.
10's the ceiling.
Right, exactly. I'd be very surprised. And that's probably the biggest influence that you will see from Mark Ingram is when they're in the red zone, they're going to pound the football. So anyway, I mean, there's really nothing you can do here, man, unless you are just absolutely convinced.
Let me add one more piece to that. The difference between a guy like Thomas and Hill is Thomas is going to be steady Eddie the whole way. Hill is going to be one of these guys that goes off for 170 yards and a couple scores 1 week and is held to 50, 60 and maybe a score the next week, or maybe even a little less than
that. Might happen twice all year. That might happen twice. And then he might literally get 150 yards every other game.
And I love Hill. But if I want a steady set of points I can bank on weekly, especially in a PPR, Thomas is good for double digits every week from this point forward.
All right. You might be 100% right there. And Hill being more of a non-PPR guy, probably a bad example. But I think if I have the opportunity to acquire Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham, most likely Brown, probably not so much Beckham, by just simply giving up Thomas straight up in a trade, I'm at least entertaining the idea. I mean, it depends on the rest of my team, of course. I don't want to make a blanket statement, but I wouldn't immediately write that off because we know that 28 receptions isn't going to extrapolate. I mean, we know that's not going to happen, right? So anyhow, another receiver who's playing, in my opinion, way above his head. I have a feeling you probably agree, but we'll find out. So Stephon Diggs, similar situation to Thomas. Diggs, though, he has a history of starting off hot and then fading, and sometimes not even just fading, like completely disappearing, okay? Does Kirk Cousins coming into this picture change anything? Because, I mean, I have to be fair to Diggs. He hasn't exactly had, you know, the ideal quarterback situation in his career in Minnesota, right? So being fair to him on that point, it is to a degree understandable why he faded. But you know who it didn't fade? Adam Thielen. Does Kirk Cousins, to you, remove that concern or drastically lessen the concern of Diggs falling off? Looking ahead here really quick, we got matchups with Buffalo, obviously a wonderful play. Not so great at the Rams, not so great at Philadelphia, even though we did just see Tampa shred them. I don't think you're going to see that twice in a four-week window. Arizona's playing really well. Patrick Peterson looks rejuvenated playing in zone coverage. And the Jets, Tremaine Johnson, Morris Claiborne, on the road for Stephon Diggs in that game. I think we might be seeing, like, this Buffalo game might be it. And then we see another classic Stephon Diggs fall off the cliff.
Small cliff. Dad joke number two here. I dig him. You mentioned Cousins being the best quarterback situation there in a while. Yeah, absolutely. Since that renaissance year of Favre, Cousins has stabilized the quarterback position and will continue to do so. You're going to have some up and down matchups. He's not going to post 100 yards and a touchdown every week. The offense has a lot of different weapons. You know, Rudolph at tight end is by no means a slouch. I mentioned my love for Cook earlier. He's going to get moving sooner than later. Hopefully sooner than later anyway. So there's going to be some ups and downs. Like I was talking on Thomas. Thomas is going to be that consistent every week guy. Diggs isn't that guy. He's never been that guy, but I don't think you're going to see the length of the droughts for his production be what they've been historically, because I think Cousins won't be part of that problem that we've seen out of the Minnesota quarterbacks in recent years.
All right. I mean, fair enough. I mean, I'm actually quite high on Kirk Cousins, and if he's going to have a good season, obviously he has to get the ball to people, right? And Diggs is going to be one of those people. I just don't see it being, I see no reason to get overly excited about his, you know, hot start. It's going to be a 3-game window of him playing out of his mind. And then you're going to see likely a month of what happened to Stephon Diggs.
Now, to your point, contract year is done with. They already paid him, but I think Diggs is a lot better than you're giving him credit for, especially with a better quarterback under center.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know Stephon Diggs personally. I have no idea what his personal motivations are. From everything I'm aware of the guy, I don't get the impression that he's a big money first type person. I don't think the contract really should play too much of a role. You know,
it always plays a role.
I don't believe that. I really, not always. There's some, Tom Brady is the perfect example of it doesn't always play a role.
Oh, okay.
If it played a role, that New England team would have only won 2 Super Bowls. He would have cashed in, and that would have been the end of it.
Yeah, that's okay. Tom Brady is the one asterisk to the rule as usual.
All right, so here we are, week 3. Couple of guys to run through that I've seen a lot of question marks about so far. Start or sit, Austin Eckler versus the Rams.
PPR flex start only.
Agree, especially with that PPR work underneath against that defense. They're going to be happy to give him 6 to 8 catches, no question. Now the similar back here, Philip Lindsay versus the Ravens.
Bench.
Wow. I don't know. I think he's playing so well. I know the Ravens defense is really good against running backs and pass catching running backs, running backs. It doesn't matter. They've been really good against running backs, but
the flow of game thing worries me. It could be Freeman this week. The flow of game worries me. We still don't really know who Philip Lindsay is, and he hasn't been that huge of an option in the passing game so far.
Yeah, I really have to jump in here. I said, let's make this quick, and I got to jump in on this one. Freeman, I have had so many people ask me, should I give up on Freeman already after 2 games?
No.
He's actually still an RB3, and that's where you drafted him, right? I mean, that's where everybody drafted him. Unless you were overzealous at the end of, you know, the draft season, you draft him in round 4 or 5. And even if you draft him in round 5, it's entirely possible he was your third running back, especially this year, because receivers were so deep in the draft, running backs were top heavy. You got your first two running backs, and there's a really good chance that you may have come back with two receivers, and then that fifth pick was another running back. I don't think people should be, you know, jumping ship just yet, but this week, PPR only, Lindsay is a playable guy in your flex spot. Otherwise, I don't really want anything to do with that backfield. Big game last week from Andy Dalton. Does it carry over into week 3 against the Carolina Panthers?
Only in 2 quarterback leagues would I consider him.
All right. I am going to say, if you're extremely desperate, he's a low, low, low tier QB1, but I think you'll be able to find a, you know, clearer path to points somewhere else out there. Keelan Cole coming off a massive game. This time he has the Tennessee Titans. Start or sit?
Play. Titans have been atrocious against wide receivers as well.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like almost like a trap game in a sense from a fantasy perspective. Not, I don't think the Titans are going to beat the Jaguars, but from a fantasy perspective, it almost feels like, you know, Cole had such a good game that now he's going to give a dud, but the matchup's brilliant. And I think
Bortles is hot right now.
Well, yeah, and I think they learned something from that game against New England. Push the pedal to the floor, and if it's working through the air, let it work. Don't get in your own way. Don't all of a sudden say, guess what, we're going to have to pound the rock for the next 3 series. Just keep hammering through the air if that's what's working. So, anyway, Mr. Will Disley, Dallas Cowboys.
I'm playing him again, back to what we said earlier. Seattle has so few working weapons right now after Lockett. I think Disley is just a guy that they have to utilize.
For as much as it pains me to agree, not just agree with you, that always pains me, but to agree that Will Disley is a playable guy 3 straight weeks, I have to agree. I really do have to agree, because what you just said as far as the weapons, and again, that defense, they're going to get on Russell Wilson so fast, he's not going to have a choice but to get rid of the ball and get rid of it in a hurry. And at some point, they're going to be in the red zone, right? I mean, Dallas has a good defense, but they're not that good. I don't think they're going to keep Seattle from, you know, sniffing the end zone. Speaking of a guy who's had trouble in his short NFL starting career with sniffing the end zone, Jimmy Garoppolo against that porous Kansas City Chiefs defense.
Play, shootout, shootout, shootout. I love any part of a team going against Kansas City's defense this year. It's most of these games are going to be 30-plus point outings from both sides of the game.
I want to agree, but I think that if you have an option somewhere else, if you got a different guy that you're considering who might be, you know, facing a similar matchup, it's not an automatic go for Jimmy G for me. But I would say in a vacuum, yes, start just about anybody against the Chiefs.
Garoppolo or Fitzpatrick?
Oh, wow. I think you have to go with Fitzpatrick. I really do. I mean, you think you absolutely have to go with Fitzpatrick.
Wrong answer.
You're talking about, you know, at least two proven capable quarterbacks shelled the Chiefs defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to put Jimmy G up on that mantle just yet. I mean, I think he'll be that guy, but horrible. Of course they're horrible. If my memory's right, they changed 7 of their defensive starters from last year, and their defense wasn't, you know, particularly impressive last year either. So anyway, yes, the Chiefs suck. Yes, Jimmy G is playable. To me, it depends on the other options around, you know, what you have to work with, right? So, Deion Lewis against that Jaguars defense.
Bench. Bench, bench, bench.
PPR, I'm going to play him, and I'm going to play him no higher than a flex. And it's simply that same mentality. That defense is going to funnel everybody into the middle. They're going to funnel short check down passes. They're going to be happy to give up 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9 receptions. And if I get 9 plus, you know, even 30 or 40 yards out of him, that's a very good flex play consideration against such a, you know, stiff defense. So finally here, is there anyone else out of that group, you know, or anyone else you'd like to talk about? Maybe some deeper flyers, less heralded players who could help fantasy owners?
So I mentioned Corey Clement earlier. I think he's a top 10 PPR running back this weekend against Indianapolis. I mentioned Bortles a second ago. I think he's a big play quarterback, like starting quarterback in a 12-team standard league this week against Tennessee. Theo Riddick, I think, is a surprise play against New England. Lots of checkdowns in that bend but don't break Patriots defense against Detroit. Calvin Ridley and DJ Moore, 2 rookie wide receivers, both got in the end zone last weekend. I think both of them continue their touchdown streak this weekend. Moore's a little bit of an asterisk, though. Cincinnati's been horrible against hybrid tight ends who like to flip out wide. And with Carolina having their problems at tight end right now with Olsen gone, I think Moore, who had that one catch last week for a big 54-yard touchdown, can kind of slide into that same positioning and mismatch and put Kansas City's defense in a hole.
That's an interesting theory. And I mean, I wouldn't be afraid to play him if you're looking for, you know, a wide receiver three or a flex spot guy, but I do have to hammer home the one point. You said that one 54-yard catch, because that's all it was.
Yep, I know.
So for me, Antonio Gates, again, that must be my mantra today, is find these guys who can catch a lot of passes in the middle of the field because they're going against a defense that's strong on the outside. That's apparently where my brain is today. I think Gates is an okay play. You know, he and Philip Rivers can play catch in the red zone with their eyes closed. I'm not worried about his lack of involvement otherwise, because that's all you're going to be doing here. You're shooting for the stars, hoping to get in the end zone. That's it. There's nothing else you're going to gain from that situation. Charles Clay, similar situation, but at some point we're going to see that Buffalo passing game open up a little bit. And he might be, for as sad as it is to say, as a tight end, he might be their best downfield weapon right now. Geronimo Allison, again, a lot of focus there. I mean, you know, Josh Norman probably will shadow Devontae Adams. That makes me want to shy away and assume that Rodgers probably will as well, thinking that, you know, Geronimo Allison might be a better play with a lot of one-on-one coverage. And then if you are right about that shootout against the Kansas City Chiefs defense, somebody has to catch passes from Jimmy Garoppolo. Trent Taylor wasn't so great last week. I thought he'd have a pretty decent PPR game last week. He really wasn't the thing at all. So maybe I'm trying to shoehorn him here, but Trent Taylor should be a PPR wide receiver three or flex this week. Well, Ryan, I think it was pretty fun. Hopefully we can learn something, you know, after one more week of play, we start seeing some trends develop after 3 weeks. And then next week, we can give a little more intricate insight as to what we're seeing as far as patterns developing. Trends can be, you know, the best way to get ahead of what can be a, you know, wealth of fantasy points if you're looking to acquire somebody off the wire, perhaps trade for somebody. It'll be really interesting to see what week three brings.
Yeah, statistics are going to start making sense here, people, very, very soon. Just stay the course. It will happen.
Well, Ryan, what makes sense over at thehuddle.com?
Oh, go get all of our award-winning content. You can do customized player rankings for your own scoring system, all the waiver wire pickups you need, strong plays, weak plays, as well as detailed weekly starting rankings updated throughout the week. Use the code PODCAST18, that's PODCAST18, and get $10 off to help lead you to fantasy football domination.
Excellent. All right, for Ryan Benigni, I'm Corey Benigni. Thank you for listening. Good luck in week 3.